Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone getting it right. And we are back for the second time around.
The man is right.
With Club Impresario, legend of the nightlife. And last time I said you were a legend, you were like, am I dead?
Well, you know? Am I back because I didn't get it right the first time?
Nah, you got it back because you got it super right.
You're resurrected.
Oh. We're here with the man himself.
He came back like Lazarus.
Mr. Steve Lewis. Yeah, welcome.
I'm a comeback guy. I come back a lot of times. It's good. In fact, I like falling down. And in my life, whenever I fell down, and it was like the worst thing ever happened, jail, divorce, whatever, I smile. I learned to smile in the worst scenario. I laugh because I know that I'm going to pick myself up and have a new adventure.
You know, finish it.
Yeah, and that's it. And I'm going to go on. You know, break up with a broad and you get divorced. You know that somewhere out there is going to be a new relationship. And that's going to be great.
You hear that, special someone's out there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm recognize. Not available right now, but I'm on my third of five wives.
So mathematically.
Yeah.
Listen.
Is she aware of that?
Yeah, she's told. Yeah. She was told that she's number three. That's number four is going to be a six-month relationship with a 19-year-old girl. Just get that out of the way.
Then
somebody,
you need to bank that out. No, but I think what just occurs to me, every time you talk, there's a certain level of insight that I've encountered in my life that only two kinds of people possess, and this is just absolutely true. Tibetan lamas and like deep meditation dudes that I've spent time with, or people that have spent time in prison. That's it. There's like a certain perspective on the sort of fleeting nature of things and seizing opportunity and moment that only people who have been through some really serious experience or who have done like some deep, for real psychic dive and introspection have. And it's uncanny. It's either like, I went to jail for 5 years for smuggling coke, or I did a 3-month retreat in Nepal.
Well, I think everybody should go to jail. I think everyone has to. I mean, I always thought I was going to go to jail. I didn't know what it was going to be for. When I was growing up, I thought. In fact, there were no photos of me during my trial. They couldn't, because I was always, you know, I knew I was going to go down.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah, because I lived close to the edge and I pushed the envelope and all those cliches. But yeah, I always thought I was going to go. But I got a year, and for like I got out in 10 months and change, and I sat there and I did all these things that I never had a chance to do because I couldn't do anything. I had to read. I had to teach. I read every Hemingway book, and I read anything that I could. And I taught classes. I taught classes in astronomy because the inmates could look at the stars and not the rest of the world. So I taught them what they were looking at, and so they would go out and look at the stars. And I taught them ornithology because the birds were flying in and out, and they could see.
How'd you learn that stuff?
I learned it just because I always loved that stuff, and I had telescopes, and I always studied birds. But I also had, while I was there, I had someone under my payroll still who went to, you know, Columbia, and I would say to them, look, send me everything you want that there is to know about blue jays. And she'd send me in 800 pages on blue jays, and I'd read it and teach the class.
You know what I fucking love is that I just like that. I picture all these people striving to be where you were in like the nightlife scene in New York, and they're doing all this stuff and they're working so hard to be something that maybe they're not, maybe they aren't necessarily. And you're like upstate looking at Blue Jays.
But you see,
I love that. Because you're striving
to run a club.
It's not going to work.
That's not what's happening. What's happening is finding yourself. And in a club, I found myself because I was a nerd. I grew up a nerd in Queens, and I was overachieving again. I was pretending to be Humphrey Bogart the entire time I was there.
Explain Humphrey Bogart again.
Saw Casablanca when I was a little kid, and I saw that scene, that early scene where Bugatti, whatever his name was, is running from the Gestapo, and there's shooting going on, and Bogart, when it's over, looks at the orchestra, tells the crowd, hey, it's over. Go back to doing what you're doing. Looks at the orchestra, and with a look, they start playing again. And then he leans down, and he looks at a sherry glass, and he straightens it out, a sherry glass that had spilled. And that attention to detail and the way he commanded the crowd, I wanted to be that guy. I wanted to wear that white tuxedo jacket.
That's Matt while he produces us right there.
Yeah. Well, I became
Bogart.
He's not
Bogart. Even looking at us.
Oh.
Yeah, he's on it.
I became Bogart, you know, in my life. And it's gotten me through. But Then I became Bogart. I pretended to be Bogart, but then I found within myself the qualities that that Rick represented, and I became that person. So in the clubs, I had that piece, and when I was in prison, which was a year, was not a big deal. I mean, the guy's doing big time, but in that brief time I was there, that minute, I found myself that peace, the ability to relax in there and to accept it and use the time, assess, hey, I'm here. Instead of crying about it, work every single day to make myself a better person and use that time and use the circumstance of the isolation. Well, I mean, it's like the meditation. In a sense, it was a deep meditation for me.
Yeah.
You know, so you only use the phone like 30 seconds a day. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Was there ever things that when you're in those experiences, are there things that you just missed about being like in that element, in nightlife with friends and all the or associates? Like, would you call the people that you were around friends?
Oh, some of them were. Some of them were just like in life. They were just Facebook friends. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The things I missed, you know, obviously sex, but I'd been married twice, so I was used to it. And I remember when I got out and the limo picked me up and they stopped to get gas and I went into the convenience store and the gas station and they gave me money and buying newspapers and picking out the things that I wanted. That was weird. Buying you don't have the choices in there, but you learn. I mean, I went down to 166 pounds and I ate well and I got myself in shape and, you know, there was a lot of positive things and I didn't dwell on what I was missing. You learned I wasn't going to dwell on it. I was going to see it as a positive experience and I also tried to get to understand the guys that were there and all the innocent men that I was surrounded by and, you know, because they're all innocent, or most of them anyway. But, I was innocent and I felt that it was a challenge to look at the abyss and fall into it and climb out. I mean, I've fallen down a lot. Again, like I said, you fall down. It's how you pick yourself up and what you do when you get out. And I planned on getting out. I designed the club when I was in the joint, and I opened it up like 5 weeks after I got out.
And which club was that?
That was Plaid.
Okay.
Plaid. It wasn't the greatest. It was the greatest club of its time, but nobody understood it. And, I mean, we had, great bands and great things. It was ahead of its time. It was called Plaid because of the grunge movement, the Plaid shirts and all that. Mm-hmm. And it was way ahead of its, not the grunge movement, the hipster movement. That and the pianos at the time were the hot clubs at that time. But it didn't make enough money in the terms of the hip-hop crowds that were going to clubs and buying bottles. So,
right. What year is that?
I don't know years, but I guess I got 2003, I guess.
Okay.
That's a year I might know.
You know, I love that because in our last interview, you said, I don't know years. So the whole interview is like a treasure hunt because you'd be like, well, people were wearing like, you know, jeans, but it was pink or something. I'm like, oh, that's the late 80s.
Yeah.
I think my life, thank God, it's an absolute blur. I mean, I can remember details to that blur.
Yeah.
But it's a blur. I mean, there was so much going on every night.
Right.
Thank God I lived a very full life. And that's why I said last time, I don't have any problems. A friend of mine died today named Walter Sessna, and I'll shout out to him.
Sorry.
He was a great guy, and he lived life. And he, you know, but I'm going to live my life for Walter now because I'm still here and I can do things. And
right.
and for before Walter Pedro and for all the people that have died in my life before me. And life is so precious that I'm glad I've done what I've done. And, yes, I've done my bucket list a dozen times. And I have very few things that I regret doing. I mean, that I would like to still do.
Right.
There's very few things on my bucket list, and maybe a couple weird things that I've developed lately. I need to go back to Thailand, but you know, I should leave right now. In fact, and cut this short. But
all right, that's a wrap. Steve's bouncing
off to Bangkok.
Yeah, dude is
Pat
actually
Palm.
Literally
yo, people listen
right
to this.
Now.
Leave whatever. Stop whatever you're doing and go to Thailand. Trust me.
It's cool. You can still listen to the pod.
Yeah,
just
we're everywhere.
Download them and listen to them on the plane.
Yeah, but you won't want to when you're in Thailand.
No, you will. That's
okay.
Actually,
okay.
You know,
I
don't
agree
listen to Steve shit on that. Yet.
You will want to listen to it in Thailand.
Two dope boys in a podcast in Thailand. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Do people listen to it in Thailand? Do you have any way of tracking that?
There are some. I believe there are people who listen to it in Thailand.
I mean, we do. We can track that kind of stuff, actually.
We can track
it. And we can see where people are like downloading.
Super produced. Well, I know that our main cities, I think, are New York. There's a lot of people in Montreal.
L.A.
L.A. and London.
Yeah.
And then there's also a contingent in Boston and San Francisco.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of are in those hubs that would make sense. Yeah,
where people are doing things and breaking things and rebuilding things and all that kind of stuff. But Thailand is pretty amazing. It's someone
I know a lot. Well, it's funny because I know people, again, on that same, those extremes. I know I need to get to Thailand myself. And I know people who've gone to Thailand and ordained and become Buddhist monks for a minute. And I know people who've partied their fucking brains out in Thailand.
Yeah.
I'm working with a guy now who just got back from Thailand, and since he got back, he's completely useless.
It's like a two, three week
people
detox.
Around me saying, well, he's completely useless. I go, you gotta give him time to chill out. His brain is there. And you know,
but
I haven't gone in 3 years, and there isn't a week that goes by that I don't yearn to be there. And I just don't have time right now, but it's gonna happen soon.
I mean, I have no doubt.
That's a good place, because you know, I don't want, like, when we have you on, because we're going to be doing this more.
Yeah,
like,
could you become a regular? I want you to be the Two Dope Boys in a Podcast senior Knife Life correspondent.
Oh, that's so hot. That's so hot.
Yeah.
In my view, the greatest honor I've ever had.
This is a man who's had honors.
I'm so honored.
You know what? I'm just going to take that. Yeah. I'm going to ignore any humor in that.
But that's the thing. Like,
I'm serious.
But you're still, like, you're doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's actively doing stuff.
Absolutely. And I'm designing a restaurant right now.
Yeah.
It's about 3-4 weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Allen Street. It's called Rebel Allen. I didn't make up the name. I don't like it, but it's I like what I'm doing. I'm designing it, and it's going to be a cool restaurant with a Korean chef, and I'm very excited about the place. Very romantic. I'm talking about designing 3 or 4 other places. I'm in the throes. I'm still writing for Black Book. And, I'm trying to push my movie script, which somebody should buy.
Oh, that's fucking insane if nobody's bought your movie script.
So it's a great movie script.
Can we touch a little bit on, I don't want to get, you know, anything ahead of itself, but the last time, this is how fun and brilliant you are to talk to. When we get off mic, the jewels keep coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the last time you were here, when we were done with the interview and we tracked New York from the late 70s through about 2003, 2004. I know you don't know dates, but I think I figured it out. So then we were talking about, okay, what is the next wave of nightlife? Because there's a lot of kind of whack clubs now. And
but great clubs.
And some great clubs that are,
like, you've been one of those people outspoken about, like, this is one of the best periods.
Yes.
Well, I don't think I've said there's that many great clubs. What I've said, there are great nights and great parties, but to say the great club, I can name like 5.
Okay. Like 5. And maybe we add
Good Room.
I don't think that's a great club, although, you know, I designed it, and they just gave me Time Out, just awarded it the 6th best club, dance club in America, and they gave me a shout out. I like Good Room, and I think it's good, but I'm not a house guy. So for house heads, I think it's fantastic. I just, I don't consider that a great club, because with me, great clubs have to be mixed on many levels, because that's my criteria.
Explain that again to people. I want to get to the point I was trying to load up, but explain mixed.
Yeah, go into that mixed element.
When you used to come to my old the clubs that I ran back in my youth, the thing was, I was mixing different races, economic strata, sexual orientations. Right. There were drag queens dancing in the bars while black card yuppies spent money and tried to impress stripper girls, while guys in turban ran around. And, you know, it was everything.
Right.
It was everything. The poor and the rich and the artists and all that, all in one room. And you don't, and we had multiple dance floors. Now it's usually one dance floor, one type of music, and a crowd that is basically looks like each other.
Do you think that that's a reflection of, because I was going to get to that bigger question, but that just hits me, because everything now, and actually maybe it does get to the other question, but through social media, through us being in our specific bubbles and social feeds, there, you know, I think of some of the most interesting, like one of the most interesting experiences that I've had in my life is just like hitchhiking in Turkey, right? Like, where did that lead me? I ended up meeting this fascinating dude who had an ancient Mercedes, and he ended up showing us this whole set of fruit farms that he owned, right? And that was just basically from, by necessity, being like, I gotta throw my fucking finger up because no buses are running out of this tiny village. Throwing yourself into unsuspecting and different situations. And as you're talking about the club culture and how it's shifted and people not mixing, it just seems like in so many ways, people don't really want that now. They're looking for themselves.
Because of social media, you know what you're getting into before you go. Yeah. And I used to like to go to clubs where you could get lost. Because once you get lost, sometimes you get found. And there's not that excitement of being lost. Right. There's not that danger factor. There's nobody smoking cigarettes. And I hate cigarettes. And I hated it when I come home and have to wash my hair out of the smoke. But there was something loose about them. And that looseness has escaped us.
They create conversations. They're disgusting, but they create conversations.
That's
you go to a smoker's corner, you bum a cigarette, you have a conversation.
But there's five or so great clubs in New York. And they are still mixed. I mean, I'm a big proponent of House of Yes, which I can walk into any time because there's a mixed crowd. I'm accepted, and the queen is accepted, and the pretty little girls with their cell phones and selfies are accepted, and it's a really great crowd, and the music is mixed. There's two dance floors, and it's really fun, and it's fun, and I don't know anybody there half the time, and I have fun, and I like, you know, there's Paul's Casablanca, which I'm not supposed to mention because it's that great, and the box is still great, and there's just, and it starts dwindling down, you know, Paul's Baby Grand, again, Paul Sevigny, you know, and it starts winding down. See, I don't consider someplace like
that's at the Roxy. The Roxy Hotel.
Yeah. I think it's at the Tribeca Grand.
It used to be called Tribeca Grand.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They called the Roxy.
Yeah, they changed
it. In fact, I drove there the other day, dropped somebody off, yes. But yes, I think it's, I don't know. I can't consider someplace like Output, which was also on that timeout list, a great club because it's one thing. There's no door policy. God, you got to keep people out and you got to let people in. You've got to curate a mix of people so that there's intelligent conversations. And places where there's no intelligent conversations because the music's so loud. And I'm not old. I'm saying it. I sound like an old. The music's so loud. But it's not that. It's just there. An exchange of ideas can be done in dance form, but it can also be verbalized. And these clubs, a lot of them are designed not to encourage verbalization, and it's just yo, you look at me, look at you,
right?
And they're not sexy anymore.
Yeah, and that sucks. It doesn't encourage a range of experience. I mean, I know, but just so you were talking though the last time off mic, and I know Phil will have a lot of follow ups to this, but basically like how one of the other things that has happened to club culture is, you know, if we're being real, there's this broad range of why you would go to clubs, but a very basic reason that a lot of people would be interested in club culture is how it relates to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, now we have this, you know, app dating culture. So I can go set something up on Tinder or whatever, and I can bypass buying overpriced drinks at a club and all of that.
Right.
And I can just say like, all right, well, we'll just meet at the fucking bar, and I can set up the post-game intention of the club much more efficiently than going to the club. So what you were saying, if that's your only, I'm being crude to set up the premise.
I agree with you, in fact.
But you were talking about the notion that the way the clubs might need to start responding to that is by more explicitly becoming places of sex.
That's my theory. I overheard, I don't know if I said this last time or when we were talking, but I overheard two girls arguing with each other, and the girl was crying and the other girl was reassuring her, and the girl had picked up somebody in a club and gone home with him and had a terrible experience, and the girl was chastising.
Matt, what are you doing?
She's chastised.
Stop it.
So the girl, her friend, chastised, said, "You picked up somebody in a club? Why didn't you use Tinder?"
That is very warped logic.
Yeah. And I listened to it, but it taught me something.
Right.
That the 20-somethings would rather go, okay, Cupid, good, whatever, because they can learn more about the person than just the visualization or the dance moves.
Right.
So I have been going to like what they call sex parties. It's not orgies, but parties where people are going specifically to hook up.
Yeah, and this is a new outgrowth, and definitely in New York nightlife. That's something that's popping a lot.
I pay the
amount of people that go to these. No, just to be clear to a broader audience, these are a very common occurrence in New York. It's a new sort of.
Yeah. I paid $300 for a couple to go to the last one, and I hung out with very boring, pretty people, but they were completely boring. There was a DJ playing music, a great DJ. I happen to know him. And it just didn't have the vibe. In fact, my clubs were way sexier. But I believe that, to get to your question, the overt sexuality has to be part of the nightlife going forward. That bottle service and the girl carrying the bottle to your table with
sparklers.
It's just not, doesn't excite anymore.
Fuck all that.
Nobody wants to see.
The first time I went into the club probably was around like 2002, 2003. I was like, I snuck in with a, I was like 19 or something. And I remember the girl came with the sparkler. I was just like, is this really supposed to be cool?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was ever cool, but it's a good sales pitch.
Yeah.
It's a flag saying, look at this table.
Okay.
They're buying, and look at the girls they're surrounded with.
Yeah.
And the girls and the girls working the room would head to that table.
It's Melania.
Yeah, right. But I think that you'll see a lot more overt sexuality. And look, I'm paying $150 or $75 to get into these parties, and that door charge is very useful. If you can do big productions and have not only just sexual, but go-go dances or performance art that's sexually orientated, get it out on the table. This is what we're here for. We're here to get high and hook up. And, sure, listen to music because we can hear music here that's different possibly than
and
you have
it
on.
And part of it.
And, yeah, but getting laid is always going to be major, and we got to bring sex back into the clubs, and the clubs that do it will succeed because the competition on the boring level is too great. Unfortunately, Noah and Jason and the guys from Strategic Tao Group have just opened up in L.A. and have gone west, and everyone's trying to follow their model, which their model was great. They worked with me, and I think they learned a lot from me, and I'm learning every day from them. They are so successful that if they don't make $20 million in a joint, they don't care about it.
Right.
Everybody wants to be them, so they're following that formulated, mm-hmm. like you're taking a college course. You follow that, that lead, that carrot. But that's not necessarily the way that works for everyone. That works for them and their crowd. But there's lots of crowds out there. And Paul's crowd works, but he doesn't make as much money. So the clubs that will succeed in the future is the club that has that and has that. The Box is a great example of that, where they're selling high-end bottles, and yet there's real funky stuff going on.
And they have more of a cabaret burlesque element to it. Like
sex.
When I think of the Box, I mean, they come from a theatrical background. That idea of like, we're going to do a theater thing, but it's sexy. They have the policy. Like, it seems like you said, Paul spaces are by nature kind of smaller, so I don't know if just from volume.
Paul is more of a clubhouse for his friends.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Box is 10 years later. It's been open 10 years, and it is the prototype of the club that I predict will be. It'll be massive clubs like that and small clubs like that.
So break it down for the broader audience. What does that mean?
It means that someone's going to open up a space like Space.
Right.
And they're going to divide it up a little smaller, so you'll have about 4 or 5 dance floors within that space.
Okay.
You're going to have house music in one, hip-hop in another, rock and roll in the other.
So we get another version of that mix-up you're talking about before.
Right.
People are going to start hitting each other again from different backgrounds.
And it won't be about the name DJ. In fact, if I had a club right now, I would never tell anybody who is DJing. The question would never be answered. I would tell them the genres of music that are being played, but I would never mention the DJ by name, and I would control costs by booking great DJs who are on their way up, which is what we used to always do.
Like me.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like Phil.
But we would offer.
I only like to have sexual experiences around music like Vibes Cartel, so that better be set up.
Okay. But we'd have five dance floors.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
5 dance floors, and sex would be pushed. And we'd work.
How is sex explicitly going to be pushed? What are we talking about here?
I think that visually you'd have things that excite you sexually.
Okay.
Sexy rooms, dark corners. I remember when I built the Palace, which is where the Petco is in Union Square. I found this.
That could be the fucking takeaway for the show.
Yeah.
That's where Petco was.
It is. It's still there.
So sad.
But Andy Warhol's factory was above it, by the way. I took the elevator up
so
to watch Ronnie
sad.
Catrone paint Andy Warhol paintings.
Fuck you, Bloomberg.
Yeah, but anyway, I built a space under the stairs. It was a really big space, bigger than the room we're in now, and I kept the lights off dark. I put some couches on there that nobody could see, and I figured people would find it and have sex, and nobody found it at first, but 4 months later, you'd try to find a spot in there, and you couldn't.
Yeah, people
and,
know what they're doing.
At the World,
right.
We had beds before the clubs did beds, and we'd have beds, and people would wait online to have sex in those beds. I mean, this is the way it is. You can't encourage that. It's not quite legal. Right. But I think that having sexy people walking around in sexy uniforms or outfits and be very flirty and encourage sexuality. Mm-hmm. Encourage sexuality.
You can open that door because that's like kind of what, that's a part of why everything is happening. So why shouldn't that be explicitly part of it?
Because nobody does anything new. They're following the formula. Right, they're following the formula because they're afraid. The rents are so high that you can't afford to have a bad weekend. Mm. And so like when I tell people what they do and how they build and people, because I build places and they ask me how much to spend, I say, well, if you're spending $250,000 on design, keep at least $150,000 to launch. And they go, what? We're thinking about $40,000. I go, no, make mistakes. Eke it out. Be exclusive. Enjoy yourself. Try to get what you want. Create mm-hmm. something new and create something that is comes from your heart and doesn't follow. There's just not a lot of people doing anything that's new. You go, Phil, I go to a new place, but there's nothing new.
Phil, that's what we always say. Love-based revolution. Don't make fear-based decisions.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
And you got to take time.
Let it simmer.
I hear exactly what you're saying, that the economic incentives that are currently existing, people are afraid of taking that time, it sounds like. Like they gotta hit it or they're afraid that they might never hit it. When it takes time to build an audience. And
if you're afraid, you shouldn't be in the business, man. If you're afraid of this business, you got to have an ego. All these guys, you talk to promoters, they're ego-driven. Mm-hmm. They have to believe in themselves. They have to believe that their dick is bigger than your dick. They have to believe that their crowd is better than your crowd. Or they shouldn't be in the game. If they're fumbling around at that basic start, they shouldn't. What they have to have is the dynamic to do something new. Again, and I like this line, and I've never used it before. There are new places opening every week, but there's nothing new. Mm. And I think that you have to offer something new, even for the sake of doing something new. It would be great. And I think you can do a lot with visuality right now. And,
right.
You know, I'm working on a concept right now. I just pitched it to a casino in Vegas, and maybe they're going to buy it. It's a completely new – I can't talk about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got a patent on the idea, and I pitched this idea, and the patent lawyer actually stopped charging and became a partner because he thinks the idea is so good.
Awesome.
But the idea will change the way some things are done in hospitality because it's completely new. And I think that – people will go because it's completely new. And if you're going to open a place out there, start with that. What am I offering that the guy down the block isn't?
Right.
And I think the people, you will be rewarded for that. There will be people who like what you do, and there will be people who don't like what you do. But the way things are now, people are opening up 250 or 350 places.
Well, you know, what always influenced me, even just as a broadcaster, I mean, I watched an interview ages ago with Howard Stern, right? And he said, look, if somebody hates me, that's fine. If they love me, that's great. But if they're indifferent to what I'm doing, then that's death.
Before your time, there was Howard Cosell. Yeah. Remember? I don't know if you guys know him.
No, that's definitely.
Of course. He was at one point in a poll the most liked commentator on TV and the most disliked.
There you go.
He won
there
both.
Yeah.
And I thought that was genius.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
I mean, genius.
There you go.
You know? Yeah. There he was.
That's a guaranteed career.
You can't be in the middle. You gotta be on the polls somewhere.
Try to be on both of them. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. The time always goes by.
But that's why you need to come in regularly.
Damn it.
You going to come in regularly?
I'm here.
There he is.
You know, as long as you record it so my wife can hear it and she knows I'm being true.
What did she think of the first one?
She loved it. She thought it was good. She passed it around to all her friends. She was very proud of me.
Oh.
She was good.
What about proud? Is she proud of us?
She likes you guys.
Okay.
She asked me. She did something she never did. She asked me about you guys. All right.
That's
cool.
Well, shout out to the missus. Mrs. Lewis. Shout out to you. Thanks for asking about us.
How did you describe us, Mr. Costablanca?
I said, you know something? Those guys were cool.
I'll take it.
The highest compliment
that's
you're going to get from this man.
It doesn't come out of my mouth. If I say you're cool, then I really respect you. I do respect you, or I wouldn't have come back the second time.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Even Matt over there never says a word.
But he's cool.
He's cool.
You know he's
that's
cool.
What I'm saying. Even Matt's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. What it is. That's part of his cool.
Oh, man. This is great.
This is great.
Steve Lewis, legend, impresario, doing it all, survivor.
Two Dope Boys in a Podcast, new senior nightlife correspondent. You're going to be hearing from him again in another month or so.
I'm so excited.
And we got the opening.
Can I get
new stuff coming?
Can I get a business card? Can I get a little card?
No doubt.
I got a job in a company once.
Right.
And my business card they gave it to me. It said breath of fresh air.
Matt already patented those for this enterprise, so he won't give that up. Super producer Matt is breath of fresh air. But look, thank you so much.
Thank you,
man.
Guys. Had brother, so
thanks
much
for
fun.
Always. We'll do it again soon.
Do you validate parking?
Hell no. We'll see you on Tuesday for more Two Dope Boys and a Podcast.